Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Talk. Tonight we are going live to discuss the next installment of our September series for the Love of Craft, looking at not just Lovecraft adaptations, but movies that still kind of play in that same lane of not just cosmic horror, but maybe science gone awry. At the very most, it's a wide umbrella. This series is just looking at practical effects and, you know, the love people have for their craft. So tonight we have a very special guest, buddy of mine, a film critic, aficionado, essayist. His name is Matt Levine, and I'll be bringing him on here in just a second to discuss David Cronenberg's The Fly. Here we go. All right, we will just... There he is. How you doing, Matt?
Good, how are you?
Awesome.
Good.
So glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
I love your background. It looks rather spooky.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. This is our front porch in our house, and we're excited to start decorating it for Halloween. So it's almost that time of year.
You don't have to do much to decorate.
Indeed. Yeah, our favorite part of the house.
No offense. I am itching to start decorating for the season.
Yeah, my favorite time of year is the best holiday. I mean, a good excuse to watch at least one horror movie a day. So I'm so excited it's almost October.
So I went to the library today where I checked out a whole bunch of classic, like, black and white horror movies that I've never seen before. And, well, I wanted to run them by you and get your gut reactions.
I'm excited.
Okay. Actually, this one I have seen before. We have talked about Cat People.
So good. It's a masterpiece of suggestion, and Jacques Tourneur is one of the best, like, visual stylists of classical Hollywood horror. It's so good, and, you know, I think, like, what it gets at in terms of sexuality and sort of, like, the danger, but also the excitement of it. It's so great and goes a little bit over the top in the Paul Schrader remake from the 80s, which also must be seen to be believed. But yeah, Cat People is the best. It's such a good movie.
Awesome. A little sneak peek for people watching. I want to, in October, I want to do a series about classic black and white monster movies. And Matt, I wanted to ask you, like, I would love to, you know, chat with you about this movie, but also its sequel, The Curse of the Cat People, which I don't know if you've seen, but I'm interested in that too.
That's an awesome movie. It's a sequel in name only. In fact, they were sort of trying to capitalize on the success of Cat People, so they sort of brought in that appeal, but the story doesn't really have anything to do with the first film. It's kind of a little bit more about parenthood and, like, childlike imagination, and it's really, really great. I'll talk to you about it.
Well, yeah, let's make a plan. So my next movie is the aforementioned remake of Cat People.
It's like we planned it, but we didn't.
My expectations for this are low, but I'm gonna give it a whirl at some point.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that your expectations should be low necessarily. Like, it's a really gorgeously beautiful movie. Really great score. There are some David Bowie songs, at least one David Bowie song on the soundtrack. Anastasia Kinski is really great. It's way over the top. It's really ridiculous, but okay. No, sometimes that can only improve a movie. So
I'm high on the camp factor with that one.
Yeah, a certain kind of camp for sure.
Here is a movie related to tonight, the 1950s Fly with Vincent Price. When have you seen this one?
It's been a long time. Probably about 15 years now. And to date myself a little bit, that was like one of my first years in college as an undergrad. So it's been a while. Probably should have rewatched it for this conversation. But it's a little heavier on the camp for sure.
Yeah.
Certainly in relation to the David Cronenberg version. But you got to love it. I mean, if you're a fan of 50s horror.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. So I'm excited to watch that one. Another Vincent Price movie. I kind of went on a Vincent Price deep dive here. I have The Tingler, which I know is a cult classic from the 50s. It just looks and sounds gross. So
You can't go wrong with that title.
I don't, and it's like an earwig. I don't know. It looks gross.
I think I haven't seen that one since high school, so that's been even longer, but that's a really
Okay. And this one, Vincent Price is a very small part, early role. It's called The Tower of London with Basil Rathbone and Boris Karloff, from 1939, I think. I don't know. Looks creepy and dark, atmospheric.
I'm
And
excited.
then, speaking of dark houses, I have the old Dark House.
Love that movie.
Do you? I've wanted to see this for a long time.
It's so good. James Whale, one of my favorite like old school horror directors. Yeah, and sort of like Bride of Frankenstein, the old Dark House is a great mixture of comedy and horror. It's really short. It's like 1 hour and 5 minutes. So good. It's really good. I might be
Perfect.
a little bit off on that.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you want to come over, like, let's watch them. We'll get to the fly. Yeah, I've always wanted to see like the 30s type horror movies outside of the classic monsters, like the old Dark House or Freaks or the Black Cat, I think is. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There's some good stuff. White Zombie is really good.
Yeah, I want to see that.
That one's great. Dr. X, I just watched recently.
Oh.
That's a really strange movie because it had like a three-strip Technicolor process that was like used way back in the day, and then they stopped using it in the early 30s. So it's like a very old color movie that has this weird surreal look where all the colors are sort of faded and sort of dreamlike. That's a really cool movie.
Neat. So I was only limited by what the library had. I can stream all these, but I checked out like too many movies from the library. So, The Fly, to turn our attention to an 80s remake of a 50s classic. Just a quick little summary on Letterboxd. The tagline, first of all, is "Be afraid, be very afraid," which I didn't know was from this movie. That's just one of those lines that I didn't know where it came from. So it goes, when Seth Brundle makes a huge scientific and technological breakthrough in teleportation, he decides to test it on himself. Unbeknownst to him, a common housefly manages to get inside the device, and the two become one. That's about it. That's
Yeah.
about it. That's it in a pod.
It's accurate and yet does not convey the full freakish extent of this movie.
So we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the downright campy when it comes to this film. We'll start with the good, because why not? Well, actually, one of the good notes I had about this movie is related to what you just said about, like, it tells you exactly what that is, but at the same time, nothing. I found a lot of the suspense with this movie came because I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew he was going to turn into a fly. But how it got us there kept me on my toes the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, to me, like this movie's like 96% good. This is one of my favorite horror movies and my favorite David Cronenberg movie, so I think it's almost entirely good. Almost no movie is perfect, but this movie is so ambitious, and I like it's a good example of why horror is my favorite genre, because that storyline that you just said is it scratches the surface of what this movie is sort of trying to get at in terms of like what is a human being and like where does the human body end and like other bodies begin, and that's body in like many different senses of the word, animal bodies or like machine bodies and things like that. I think it's about disease. I think it's about like humanity's sort of desire to be better, and that sort of destroys them in the end. It's a really sad movie, but also really disgusting and gory, and that's kind of a perfect combination, I think.
It was doing quite a number on my heartstrings. It was like super sad, but then like really wretched and vile at the same time.
Yeah. The best, my favorite combination.
Yeah. It has a ton of heart, like really sincere. It's got a lot, the love story is sincere. Like I totally buy that between Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum. What I Another big thing I love about it is how it's not a simple movie by any means, but I felt like the performances and the direction were so incredibly understated that it sold all the absurdity that's really happening, but you buy it because of the understated way it's all being delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. With such a ridiculous premise, it's kind of amazing that they pulled that off. But it really,
Right.
yeah, I think it is kind of rooted in, sort of human motivations or feelings or whatever. Because, like I think ambition again is, hubris, whatever. Like if you want to, the old school literary term. Like I think it's, Jeff Goldblum like wants to create this earth-shattering invention that will change science and change the world as we know it. And Gina Davis is a journalist who wants to, be in on this huge story. And again, like ultimately that does destroy them, which probably isn't a surprise to anybody who knows anything about the movie. But yeah, I think that's really relatable. And like the fact that they sort of just like stumble into this together and do very quickly sort of, develop feelings for each other, probably because of like partially because of their shared ambition and their like desire to like sort of make an impact with their lives, and then it all goes horribly awry. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It makes it way more, relatable and engrossing than most viewers probably would expect.
Yeah, and especially because it is at its roots, the roots of this film is a B movie, and like that's part of the fun, I think, too, when you are familiar with B movies from like the 50s, and you're confronted with a real auteur film like The Fly, it's still fun to see where even a movie as well thought out as this is still leaning into the tropes and still like just like camouflaging the tropes in something very artistic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Yeah, and it's like the tagline, I think, is kind of a good example of that because the moment that it's spoken by Gina Davis, when she says, "Be afraid, be very afraid," it's sort of out of place. Like it's a pretty intense scene, and you don't really expect it. But it like it's sort of comedic, and it like alleviates the tension a little bit. It's perfect. That's like one of the best examples of that combination, I think.
Right. And the fact that we're dealing with a mad scientist, I mean, he gets there, like when the fly genome is affecting him. He is a mad scientist. There's so great, I comment on this on 50s science fiction movies all the time. There's always a scene where the scientist just says a bunch of mumbo jumbo that you just buy it because the story needs you to buy it. And it's like, great, that explains it. And there was a part where Jeff Goldblum said some mumbo jumbo, and okay, great, we're on this train.
Yeah, I've always been a strong supporter that a little bit or a lot of suspension of disbelief is the best way to approach any movie, so I'm definitely okay
I'm okay with it too. It was awesome.
It's pretty cool too to see like the like old school technology in this movie from 1986. Like the old computers and the sort of like program that he invents to sort of like fuse these different DNA sequences. It's kind of a marvel of like, primitive analog like computer technology.
That's true.
It's
It's
cool.
like, sorry.
No, that's all I was gonna say. It's cool to see. It's great like set design and great special effects and all that.
Oh, well, in terms of the set design, I think this movie is I've it's rare that I see a production design as detailed as this. Like the set dressings, the costumes, the props, like everything was so meticulously intentional. Do you have anything come to your mind, any examples of that kind of stuff?
No, I d definitely agree. I mean, I think this again goes back to what you were just talking about, but his like rapid descent from like a mostly normal human being, like sort of an oddball, but still like quirky and like just a scientist, like not anything really threatening or whatever, like rapidly into like you said, mad scientist realm, where his like he has this loft in I think it was shot in Toronto. I guess we don't know exactly where the movie is set, but yeah, he has this loft which is like sort of run down and kind of like a cool like bohemian way at the beginning, and then like so rapidly, but so believably, like it just becomes like a lair that's like filled with like garbage and like rotting meat, and then eventually like his own rotting body parts, and like it gets more and more gross, you know?
Yeah.
It's like perfectly done, yeah.
It's a total horror nightmare setting.
Yeah.
You could believe that like Michael Myers is in that warehouse. You
Yeah.
know, it's awesome.
Crossover, I would.
Yeah, I was gonna comment on the same in the same vein, like the costuming also clearly like tracks the character development just through the costuming. There's a part where he's wearing a bomber jacket like this. And I was like, oh, because he's a fly, because he's flying. I don't know if I'm reading into it, but I think that was intentional.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just the fact too that he like wears the same clothes every day, as Gina Davis points out in the movie, and she like looks in his closet and it's like the same blazer, the same pants that he wears like every single day, and then like throughout the course of the movie, you know, starts to break away from that, starts to like change up his wardrobe a little bit.
Right.
A sign of a sort of like, you know, freakish confidence as he starts to get a little more strong, and then obviously that goes downhill from there. But yeah, you're right. The costuming is like really sort of subtle and like says a lot about the characters for sure.
Yeah. Do you want to transition into some challenging aspects, some things that maybe didn't quite work for you? I know this is like your favorite movie, so it might be tough for you, but what are some things that kind of stand out to you?
Yeah, it is sort of tough for me, but there are some things for sure. I guess like what I think is a strength of the movie could be seen as a flaw, which is that like the narrative is like so lean and tight and concise. There's not like a single moment that's like filler or like extraneous. Like we start with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis meeting each other. Like that's the very first scene. And the very last scene, and not to give it away too much, but there's nowhere you can really go after that. So I guess, you know, some people could consider it sort of a criticism that it's just like, it seems simple on the surface. Like, it really is just like the story of a man turning into a fly, basically. Incorrect. I think there's so many sort of subtexts built into that plot. But,
Yeah.
so I guess maybe that doesn't count. I think, like, maybe a more valid criticism is the question of, is David Cronenberg a misogynist or a sexist filmmaker? I think in some other of his movies that does, like in The Brood, for example, like he wrote and directed that movie when he was going through a bad divorce, and like that movie sort of is about like an angry ex-wife who creates like a spawn of hellish children. So I do think that that accusation holds up with The Brood. And with in The Fly, there's like the nightmare sequence where Gina Davis gives birth to like a huge maggot, and it depends, which is pretty disgusting. I like it, obviously. It depends on how you read that. Like, I think it could be read as sort of like, you know, like motherhood and childbirth is disgusting. Or I don't think that's accurate. I think the way it could be read is that, weirdly enough, it's kind of a metaphor for abortion. The fact that it's kind of like a weirdly a pro-choice movie, unexpectedly, because she needs to abort her baby. She knows that it's sort of dangerous for her, and there's a lot of sympathy for her in those scenes. So I
Yeah.
read some about The Fly that sort of raised that question, but I think there's actually a lot of very difficult and sort of yeah, I mean, it leads to some gruesome areas, but there's a lot of sympathy for the Gina Davis character in this movie for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about Cronenberg. If his other works speak to a sort of misogyny, I think The Fly has like some of the male characters are douchebags, but that's their character. Like that's fine. Like, you know. But as Gina Davis is treated, like you said, I think she's treated like a strong, independent woman who's just trying to, you know, do what she can, and she falls in love with a fly man. So, you know,
You do, yeah.
she's just a woman trying to survive.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think it's totally I don't think it's a valid criticism to The Fly personally.
No.
On the other hand, the sequel to this movie, maybe that is a little more accurate, but that's a conversation for a different time.
I am slightly shocked that there are as many fly movies, like just in total in the world, as there are.
And still not enough, in my opinion.
Want to watch them all with you and just like marathon all literally the good, the bad, and the campy.
Yes. Yeah.
Run
I would
the
be interested.
gamut.
I would love to hear what your take on The Bad and The Fly is, because I think your maybe your response was a little more mixed than mine.
No, I echo you. I think it's so tight that, and it's nitpicking, but you're it does force your mind to make certain narrative leaps when, like, as they're falling in love, for instance. It's like, oh, that happened fast. Or in the bar when he literally snaps a man's arm in half, and there's no consequences. He's just like, well, all right, moving on. Like, no, you would be in jail. There would be massive consequences to that. But that would be a different movie. Like, that's not the movie. So, you get it, you buy it, suspension of disbelief. I'm nitpicking, but.
Yeah, no, there are some plot holes for sure. I try to think of it like if I was an audience member, like watching that other potential movie or whatever, like, that would be kind of boring. Like, I don't really want to see like sort of him in jail for a while or whatever, so
No, yeah.
I'm okay with stuff like that.
That derails the narrative that we're on completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point for sure.
Yeah. But that's all I got, really. I had to struggle to find bad things about this movie.
I'm happy to hear that since I love this movie so much. I guess like it is pretty depressing. I guess maybe somebody who wasn't really expecting that. Like I feel like it gets again, I would put this in the good category, but I feel like towards the end it gets a little bit into the territory of there's this great line. I wish I remembered it verbatim, but Jeff Goldblum basically says, I was a human, or no, I was an insect who dreamed he was a human and it was beautiful. But then the dream ended and the insect awoke. I think the line is something like that. My
Yeah.
favorite line in the movie. And yeah, it's really kind of brutally sad on like an existential level. Like, are humans any better than flies or insects? Or are we all just made of like the same base impulses or whatever? Like, it's
Yeah.
a fascinating idea that I think horror does really well. And I love that this movie goes there, but it is pretty surprisingly bleak and depressing.
Right. So that's like, this goes into the territory, like, if it's not your cup of tea, that's fine. Because not only is it existentially depressing, it's gross. It's got a lot of like gross out body hu horror, which we love. It enhances the story we're telling, but I could see if you're squeamish, there are some rather squeamish moments in this film.
Yeah, it's not for the lighthearted. That is definitely.
No. And I think like I can handle it, but man, I was taken aback a little bit by some moments. And just how honestly good the practical effects are.
Yeah, yep. Oscar winning by Chris Wallace, I think his name is, the makeup effects. Yeah, really, really great. The Fly, too, I know I brought it up before. It's not a good movie, but it is an extremely gory movie. So beware of that whenever you do watch it.
I'll get there at some point. So what, let's move on to like the downright campy. I got something in mind, but what do you have in mind? Something that was like really silly and fun and just campy.
I love the moment when he's in full on like transformation mode and his body's falling apart. And Geena Davis, her character, comes over to his loft late in the film and he is trying to eat a donut and he just vomits onto it. And it's really gross. And then he looks at her and he's like, oh, that's disgusting, which is what everybody's thinking, of course. It's such a great way to like break up the horror and the disgustingness of that moment. I don't know. I wouldn't say that's campy per se, but it definitely injects some sort of silly humor into it, I guess, which
Oh
is.
my God. So, and it's so needed too. That's a good thing about Goldblum's character. Like, he keeps a sense of humor throughout, which again alleviates some of that existential depression.
Yeah, for sure. You have to laugh because what else are you going to do? Like, it's just completely miserable otherwise. So, yeah, it's much better.
That was good. I just keep going back to, where is he getting these baboons? Every time you turn around, there's another baboon in the laboratory.
Yeah, you got to feel for him. Yeah. I would, like there is like a tiny bit of explanation because he works for this research lab, so maybe he's like getting them through the lab. But you would think at some point they're like, we're spending thousands of dollars on these baboons, and killing. Like, they would probably stop approving that, him using them for his experiments.
And see, actually, if this movie, like, we're, it's so lean, this is an example of if it was a little bit longer, we might have a scene where he is picking up the baboon. Like, it explains the baboons. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would like to see that for sure.
Yeah, because otherwise it comes off as, really campy and silly. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't just go to the pet store and pick up a baboon.
Goldblum can, apparently.
Like, they're not dogs or rats. He uses baboons.
Like, maybe in a way that is kind of like a campy throwback to like old mad scientist movies where they did have these like strange sets where they just have like potions and animals and everything everywhere,
That's
like
true.
for the
Chimpanzees.
sorry, what's that?
Chimpanzees in cages.
Right, exactly, which they do their experiments on. Like, I feel like for the most part, I think the remake of The Fly does a really good job of sort of like not being too ironic or like winking or anything like that, but like little moments like that where I think it gives props to its forerunners.
Yeah, and like that's why I love film so much, film history. Like when you consume so many movies, you could see those hallmarks of an earlier era, maybe. Not everyone will get, but certain people can appreciate if they know the forerunners.
Yeah, for sure. This is a diversion, but I know you and I were talking about the remake of The Blob recently. A good example of that too. Like, I love the remake of The Blob way more than I thought I would, and it comments on the original in some pretty cool ways.
I feel like as I've been doing this series and just Camp Kaiju in general, like the 1980s, there was clearly a phase where they wanted to remake 50s movies. Because you have this, The Fly, The Blob, The Thing. There was an Invasion of the Body Snatchers in the late 70s, but you can throw that in. Yeah, it was just like let's remake our favorite movies that we grew up on, but now that we have like real effects to pull off, what they were trying to do back then.
Yeah, and are maybe a little bit more willing to go into like the dark subject matter that like older had to sort of like hint at a little bit more, Yeah, it's cool to see. And I, with The Thing, I love John Carpenter. What was the, sorry, you just mentioned another remake, which I totally forget now. You mentioned, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. If I remember right, that late 70s one was by Don Siegel. I could be wrong about that, but he's like a good action thriller suspense director. So, normally I'm like not into remakes or sequels all that much like nowadays, but yeah, those 80s horror movies, like it's maybe my favorite category of movie, as I fly.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating time, I think, in movie making.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, is there anything else? I think we should like give our final summation. I think this movie's a classic. I think it stands the test of time because of these themes, these universal themes, love, loss, aging, female empowerment, surprisingly, women's body rights. I think it says a lot and still manages to wink a little bit at the fun cheesiness that it's inherently made of.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's definitely its own thing, while it is kind of like taking this sort of well-known story and sort of envisioning like what would happen if this actually played out in human terms if a man became a fly. It's such a smart movie. It's really just, like you said before, visually understated, but it builds this atmosphere of dread so well. There's just a lot of like blacks and silvers and sort of muted colors. Great performances. I know that when this movie came out, it was sort of read as an allegory for AIDS, which I think is really interesting, because in 86, and it is definitely about sort of the breakdown that a human body undergoes during disease, and that can extend to any situation where a loved one is going through a serious illness. So there's so much to this movie. In lieu of rambling about it more, I'll just say that it will always be one of my favorite horror movies, and it's a pleasure to talk about.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to talk about more. Let me know, like, come October if you want to get together for Cat People. I'd love to
Yes.
do that and its sequels. Yeah, man, thanks so much.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you next time.
All right, get out of here and I'll wrap up.
All right. See you later. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Wow, and thank you all for hanging out with me and Matt. We talked about The Fly, David Cronenberg's 1986 classic. Matt and I were both in accordance on that one. It has said so much universally that I think just is as relevant today as it is in the 80s. So do check that one out. If you see any of the sequels, hit me up and let me know. Those are definitely on my to-watch list. In the meantime, next week, I will be chatting about The Thing, John Carpenter's 1982 classic, with a very special guest, a friend of mine from the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, which is an awesome podcast where they kind of do this sort of format with old-timey radio and specifically horror radio. So my buddy there is very familiar with The Thing and Lovecraftian horror. And I'm very excited to feature him on Camp Kaiju. So thank you so much. Like, follow, engage. There's a link to the merch in my bio. You can get this shirt if you want. Not this one, but maybe another one. And check us out on Letterboxd as well. All right, thanks, friends. Have a good night. Have a great week.